The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast. My name is Dan Latto, and as promised, I have sat with me Matthew Moody. Matthew, good morning.
Morning, how are you doing?
I'm good. Awesome, great to have you here. So we're actually sat in a hotel in Leeds City Centre, and it was the only way to get him because he's got such a busy schedule. Although you're not that busy today, it would appear.
No, the sun is up, and we're going to have a lovely chat, and then be on our way back down south.
Awesome. Okay, so I'm in Leeds all week because it's coming up to half term, so there's no point in me flying back to Spain, only just to fly back to England like 2 days later. So that's why I'm here all week. So it's been a tough week for me, Matthew, being here all week in England. I've got a house here in England, but I never know what to do. I never know whether to put meetings in. What do you do with your days?
Work pretty laid back, if I'm honest.
Right, okay.
I have an office in Northampton. But we don't start work before 10 o'clock.
Okay, and how many people
do you have travelling in rush hour? Why do you want to travel in rush hour?
Yeah.
Everyone else does. So our office hours are 10 till 6. I'm not generally there from 10 till 6, but I would normally go to the gym first, work out my PT, gives me grief, then have something healthy to eat afterwards, and then amble into the office and then see what's going on.
Got it, okay. And how long have you been in property for then?
So I started in 2003.
And why did you start? What was the... Most people, when we start something new, we have a trigger, something that forces us, or a realisation that we have to do something.
As it happens, that's quite fresh in my memory, because right now I'm writing a new book, and I've been going through that whole story of why did I get started.
Right.
And it all kind of stems back to being in Newark Airport on the end of another busy schedule of trips that I was on for my company at the time.
Yeah.
And I walked past a Staples bookstore, which kind of sounds bizarre because Staples are known for stationery, but they had a bookstore in Newark Airport, and this bright purple book jumped out at me. I actually thought it was a kid's book, and I went and had a look at it. It wasn't a kid's book. It was, of course, Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
So that book's changed thousands of lives, hasn't it? Hundreds of thousands.
The man's a genius, great at telling you not very much, but getting you very excited to actually take action, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah.
Read that on the plane back and thought, I've got to do something here. I was making literally millions of dollars for my company, getting paid quite handsomely, but I was never going to make millions of dollars from working for somebody.
Yeah.
So that really got me started on the path.
Okay. And when this was back in 2003?
Yeah.
More or less, yeah. Okay. And what particular aspect of property did you get into?
So I looked at a whole bunch of stuff. Investing in shares, forex trading, internet marketing, affiliate marketing, setting my own business, and I looked at property. And for me, it looked like property was an interesting way to build up assets and wealth. But what really put me off to begin with was the fact that you didn't seem to be able to make very much money from it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
And I came across HMOs, houses of multiple occupancy, and I saw that actually with the same unit you could make 3 or 4 times as much money from a cash flow point of view, and I thought, well, that is an opportunity to actually invest in something for not significantly more money, but make significantly more cash.
So this is on a cash flow monthly basis, yeah. That's what you invest in.
Yeah.
And has that strategy changed?
Across the road there, is that coffee shop?
No. I mean, over those time periods, I did foray into flats at one point, got my fingers burnt and sold them and lost a bit of money, as you do. And I think one of the things I've learned over the years, which is something I talk about in Cracking the Property Code, the book I wrote a few years back, is you've got to have one strategy. You've got to get really, really good at it and just follow that strategy.
Just do it again and
you
again.
You can do
again.
Other stuff, yes, but you've just got to become a master at something. And once you're a master at something, it doesn't matter what happens to you in life in terms of, you know, all hell could break loose, but you could go back to that strategy the day after and start making money at it again.
I don't know if you remember, there's a computer game on the BBC Micro, going back years and years and years ago, called Elite. Do you remember that game?
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah,
on that game, you started off as harmless, and then you got to mostly harmless, and then you went up, and eventually you became Elite. You had to shoot enough spaceships and so on. But also, you could trade credits, or rather, you can trade food or machinery and computers in return for making profit on credits.
Yeah.
And actually, it's one of the ways that I began to learn about business, because I would buy food from one planet and then move it to another planet and then sell it for more money, right? So what happened was I'd buy machinery on one, computers on another, and food on another, and I would just rotate around these three planets, and I just did that over and over and over again. And I got to be Elite quicker than everybody else, and I made more money than everybody else, just because the strategy in that game, which is very similar to what you're saying, the strategy, I found it, and I did it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Whereas everybody else was flying all over the place, sometimes making losing trips, you know, losing money on trips, which I thought was crazy at the time. So it's interesting that when you find that one strategy, and I think this is where many people fail, because they try a strategy and it doesn't quite work, or it falls flat on its backside, and so they go on to the next strategy, and the next, and the next, and 10 years later, they're still looking for the magic recipe.
That's right, and that's why I think a lot of people are persuaded to get into the next shiny penny.
Mm.
So right now it's serviced accommodation, which is quite amusing to me, because a lot of people teaching it have got very little serviced accommodation, but profess to know what they're talking about.
We did serviced accommodation 10 years ago with my lettings agency.
I mean, serviced accommodation has been around forever and a day. And in my old company, I was responsible for 335,000 units of basically timeshare inventory, so I know all about that kind of model, but it's not as easy as people make it out to be. But you're right, people get pushed on to whatever the latest craziest thing is. You know, rent to rent was pretty big, it's still, you know, kind of out there. People don't look at, well, actually, is the strategy I'm doing the right strategy for me, and is it going to actually give me the end result that I want? Because everybody's different in terms of what is it that they actually want out of property.
I think it's interesting, because rent to rent for me is a stepping stone, and that's it. Rent to rent has a shelf life, because first of all, you're going to end your rent-to-rent deal, and yes, you could keep getting more, but you're never going to own that asset. Always going to be somebody else's asset, and whilst it's somebody else's asset, it means you have less control. I'm a bit of a control freak, so I like to control as much as I can. I like to own the thing, and then if I want to split it up into apartments, then I can do that, if society accepts that, you know, because there's no more housing being built, or not enough at all. But I find that really interesting that people are going into rent-to-rent, which is fine, but that's like for the next 2 or 3 years in order to generate enough cash flow to get you out of your job, and then that time that you then have should be then invested in, I don't know, sourcing deals and making a lot of money, 10, 20, 30 grand. Yeah. If you're selling a deal at 3 grand, you can sell 10, there's your first 30 grand deposit.
Yeah.
And that then goes into your asset that then belongs to you. And so it's a stepping stone. And people don't think 5, 10, 20 years ahead. They think this month, next month, I've got £1,000 short this month, I need £1,000. Well, if you'd have thought about that 6 months ago, you wouldn't be in the problem that you're in now. So people aren't pushing it out there.
And I think I completely agree that a lot of people are very today and not thinking about actually, you know, most people getting into property, even people getting into property at a later stage of life, they've got 20 years ahead of them. They maybe have got 30 years ahead of them, probably with law. And a lot of people aren't really thinking about planning that far out.
Yeah.
And because they're not thinking that far out, they're very much hit by things that come and derail them and don't look at the larger picture of actually, is there a way in which you can make that particular deal or particular business or particular strategy actually work for you? And sometimes people focus on the very minutiae details, which are really irrelevant, but they get very much het up on, okay, I'm going to be derailed by this particular thing because I've had a boiler go down, for instance. And you're right, you know, you look at, say, rent to rent as a strategy, makes great cash flow, but it's something you've got for a set period of time, and then what happens? You know, what happens after that time period? And also, with all the tax changes happening right now, you know, I foresee rent to rent being a potential issue with a lot of those landlords that actually own the property thinking, you know what, I ain't going to be able to afford to keep this, so I'm going to just sell it. And a lot of those people that have hinged their businesses on basically someone else's asset,
yeah,
potentially are going to get a bit of egg on those.
So just to clarify, for those people who aren't aware what the new tax issues are, in the olden days, which is where we are right now, but that's about to change, if you've got a rent of £1,000 but your mortgage is £800, you're actually making £200 profit, and that's what you're going to get taxed on. With a new tax regime, what's going to happen is they're classing the whole £1,000 as profit. So you might end up paying 20% tax on that, which is going to eradicate all your profits. Now,
or even put you into negative profits.
Yeah, because you've got voids and you've got repairs and you've got all that sort of stuff as well. So for landlords who currently have a property where they're not having to pay tax on the rental income, that's going to change, and that's the future issue for people who currently have property and are letting it be rented by a rent-to-rent person. So I think that is going to be an issue as well, and I don't believe that there's two things I don't believe. The first one is I don't believe that the existing landlords know about the tax and how bad that's going to be, and the second thing is that the people doing rent-to-rent aren't telling them. So in a year or 2 years' time, when the tax return gets done, that's going to be a shock.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think, you know, I know that you've been looking at putting rents up, if you've not already, and we've put all of our rents up already by 10%,
right,
roughly. And they'll be going up again in another 6 months and carrying on. Because in order for the majority of landlords to just stay at even, they've got to increase rents by about 30-35%.
Yeah.
So you look at that from the point of view of, say, an asset that's say currently costing someone £1,000 a month, they're making say £2,000-£2,500 in terms of rental income. That £1,000 a month has got to go up by, you know, 30%, which,
yeah,
is quite a large increase on that overall cash flow for the,
yeah,
the rent-to-rent investor.
See, I see a lot of tenants saying, well, it's supply and demand. And whilst it might be, some landlords, they can't let it go for less than £1,000 or £1,300. They have to do it for £1,300, because otherwise we're going to go bust. So they have to hang out for that tenant. But I think...
Definitely, and I was just picking up on that. I work with a set of clients on a mentoring basis, and a couple of them have got all the existing properties that are just killing them right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting less in rent than the mortgage costs them. And, you know, we've discussed the fact that, well, what are you going to do? Because you're going to actually be making even less money, because,
yeah,
you're going to get tax on that full income. And right now you may be making, say, a loss of £100 per month. That's going to go to £200, to £300,
yeah,
to £400. You've got to get out.
See, interestingly as well, because everything I see through leads, because that's where most of my portfolio is, and we get really good yields, you know, between 7-10%. In fact, I looked at my average yield on my portfolio, it's a lot higher than most. And so I see the property investing world through the eyes of someone who has properties in Leeds. But if I lived in London, where you're getting 3% yields, so you've got a £330,000 house, and you're paying a mortgage on that, and you, I don't know what you're bringing in on that, £1,500 maybe, which is a tiny, tiny yield, you're now going to get taxed on the entire £1,500.
Yeah.
Forget about offsetting any,
yeah,
any mortgage interest costs. So the people who are going to get hit most is actually the southeast of England. And what's gone on with southeast of England? Obviously, prices have gone up, but rents are going up as well.
Yeah.
And there's not enough property for people to rent right now.
Yeah.
So people, the poorer people in particular, are being moved out of London. So it's going to hit massively. I mean, I find it interesting because I'm sort of sitting back chuckling to myself. I quite enjoy this journey of not knowing what's going on. I think I'm pretty well covered, by the way. But I'm sort of enjoying it because there's going to be huge fallout. And I just find it interesting that when the fallout comes, who's going to get blamed for that again? Well, it's going to be landlords again, isn't it? It's always landlords. It's never the government.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a very negative perception raised of landlords in the last, I'd say, 18 months to 2 years. And I think the government have been very clever at telling the broadsheets and media what to say and do, because,
yeah,
you know, let's face it, if anyone thinks that isn't happening, they're living on a different planet than,
yeah,
you and I exist in. And there was this huge, huge scandal about MPs, expenses and all this kind of nonsense going on, that, you know, they were basically fiddling the taxpayer and everyone was getting really upset and everything. And yes, a few people were made scapegoats and went, but all that stuff's still going on.
Yeah.
It's just changed in terms of, oh, the media is now all about landlords and raping and pillaging and, you know, putting people out of homes and no one can get a home because the landlords are nicking them and this, that and the other. And I've been very actively involved in the whole kind of petition that was going on to really kind of get that raised in the Houses of Parliament. And the responses I've had back, a lot of which have been template letters, but I've pushed my MP to get more specific data, which he has got for me. It's very much a case of, well, it's all about this levelling of the playing field. And the thing is, there is no levelling of the playing field because there's a huge amount of different taxes that you and I are subject to, such as capital gains.
Yeah, it's a different playing field.
A homeowner isn't. But also, you know, this whole thing about, oh, well, landlords are basically taking properties away from other people. Well, I don't know about you, but every landlord I know, and I know a lot of landlords and property investors, would never, ever, ever, ever pay full price for property,
yeah.
Ever. They would always be looking for a deal.
Yeah.
Even if it's 5%, 10%, you know, from some of the old school landlords, most people I know would be looking at 20%. And there's only a certain limited number of people that are going to agree to those kind of deals. And who
yeah.
are they? They're large developers that want to get rid of stock that's overpriced to begin with, and distressed homeowners that have got a huge issue they need to get rid of.
Yeah.
So I find it kind of incredulous what's happened, although I have seen it coming for a little time.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? Are you still buying property?
Not currently myself right now.
Okay.
I'm more focused on management we've got. We've got
yep.
Lane Agency in Northampton and basically increasing the number of units we have there.
What's the letting agency called?
Stanford Knights Letting.
Got it, okay.
So we're pretty much focused on HMOs.
Okay.
About 90% at the time. And I've been focused on that for probably the last 3 years to build it up to a certain level. And it's at a level now where it's going to be kind of pushed over to someone else who's taking it on.
Brilliant.
And that'll be done and dusted. And then for me, the next part of the journey is you know, we were talking offline before this, is spearheading the growth of property bonds that we're basically launching very soon.
Brilliant, okay. So tell me more, what's a property bond?
A property bond is essentially an investment vehicle regulated by the FCA that people can put money into that will give them a targeted return. We're targeting a return of around 8%.
Okay.
The reason it's so high because most bonds, if you go and look at them right now on Google, are about 4-4.5%.
Okay.
Ours will be a blend of HMOs and high yielding single lets. So, you know, similar to, you know, the North of England, much,
okay.
much better in terms
so
of yield.
Can I clarify? So you're getting an 8% return.
Yeah.
So that's you put, I don't know, 10 grand in. You're going to get 8% back every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then does that 10 grand, the capital itself, actually increase in line with the property increasing, or does that stay the same?
It doesn't, no.
So it's,
you get that back.
So you're getting a fixed income of 8%?
It's a target return of 8%.
A target return of 8%.
Yeah.
So it can go up
or down.
It can
go up or down.
Okay.
I mean, based on the analysis I've done, and you know, one of the things I found quite interesting of late is a lot of the statistics being bandied around by people like the government and the Bank of England are incorrect.
Yeah,
not
course,
basing
yeah.
them on correct information.
Yeah.
And we're using data from a quite a small company based over in Cambridge that has the best, most up-to-date data available right now, which
yeah.
takes into account everything, not just mortgages, but also what's happening on the repossession
yeah.
side of things, and what's happening with council housing and social housing. And when you look at it overall, in terms of what's happening with the country, there is this kind of north-south divide getting even larger
yeah.
and larger. And, you know, a lot of investors you'll talk to, particularly in the south, they want to invest in London. They want to have something in London. It's all about having a trophy house.
Yeah.
It's not really about making any money for
yeah.
them. It's about, I've got property in London.
Yeah.
Don't you know, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Just doesn't make any money. So whilst from a bond point of view, we do have to invest some stuff in London because it will be expected. That's not what's going to make the money.
Yeah.
What makes the money is high-yielding HMOs and single-let stock north of probably Derby and Norwich.
Got it, okay. I find it interesting what you say about the government and the statistics. The government uses statistics which confirm what they're trying to put out to the media, effectively. And, you know, there's lies, and statistics, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but just recently there's The X-Files have just started again.
Yeah,
I watched it last
yeah.
night. And there was a line in that TV programme last night by Fox Mulder. And he said, I can't remember it word for word, but I was going to post it on Facebook, and I think people would have thought, oh, here's Dan on his conspiracy theory stuff. But the one line that he said was, it's a requirement of a government to lie to you. It's a requirement for the government to lie to you. And I just thought, that's really interesting. I sat and I missed the next couple of minutes because I just sat thinking about that one line. We'd lied about the Iraq war, weapons of mass destruction, the level of homelessness, child poverty, that's been eradicated now because they changed the statistics on that. They chose which statistics to use instead. I just thought, that's really interesting, isn't it? And you know, one of the recent lies the government have said is that 1 in 5 landlords will be affected by the tax. And they've got no basis for that information at all. It was just a totally made-up statistic.
Yeah, I mean, I've got direct confirmation from the Treasury now that that figure is nearer to 80%.
80%?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I've got actual, well, written letters from the Treasury confirming that.
So it's interesting as well, because even if it was 1 in 5, that's landlords. It's not landlords that's ultimately affected, it's tenants. And if 1 in 5 landlords, if it's the 1 in 5, it's usually the landlord who's got more property. So it might be like 1 in 5 landlords might affect 50% of the tenants.
Well, the thing that they don't really talk about is the fact that, according to the research I've done in terms of understanding what's going on with the dynamics of the private rental sector, off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like 80% of landlords earn 79% of the stock, which basically means most landlords earn one property.
Yeah.
So when you then say, oh, well, 1 in 5 is going to be affected, well, how can that possibly be? Because most people were saying earn one property, which means that they do then have a job, which then means that what's going to happen is, say they're earning the average salary of, say, 26k, they're getting taxed on that.
Yep.
Now you add into this, whatever that rental property is, let's just say it was 6k interest, then they're now going to be taxed on 31k, not 26k.
Yeah.
So how can it then only affect 1 in 5?
Of course,
it's not possible.
It just doesn't stack up. The numbers don't work at all, do they? It's fairly obvious. So on the property bond stuff then, what's minimum entry requirements? If I wanted to get into that, I've got a couple of grand I want to spend. What's the minimum entry that I can get started investing in a property bond?
I should know those figures. I'm going to say it's probably about 20-25k.
About 20-25k. Okay, so what's to stop, or what's the benefit of doing that rather than putting 20-25k into, I don't know, a property up in the northeast as a deposit?
I think this is aimed more at sophisticated investors who have already made their money and are looking for something better to do with it than what is in the banks, if I'm really honest.
So it's the comparison isn't another property where the boiler's broken and the tenant's phoning you up and you've got to fix it.
No.
It's a totally offhand investment that's going to get you a better return.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, all those funds are secured on property.
Yeah.
So one of the benefits, I think, for say a sophisticated investor who may say have had a business and they've sold a business and they've got a couple hundred thousand in the bank, whatever it may be, they're not making any money in the bank, put it into the bond and the bond's going to give a tight return of 8%.
Yeah.
If anything went wrong, those funds are secured on the asset.
Of course,
The person that owns those shares in that bond earns a portion of that asset, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
So we've tried to do it in a way that they're as protected as possible, but I think one of the reasons we decided to develop it, or develop it with a team of people, is that there's a lot of bonds out there right now that are just target returns of 4%, 4.5%, because they're all investing in new build stock and stock in the South East.
Yeah.
And as we've already discussed, they're just not really that kind of level of yield present. And I really believe that with the HMOs and the experience I've got in HMOs is the opportunity to offer something of much higher yield to people, which is also, I think, slightly safer, because as you know, if you've got 5 people in a house, it's unlikely that house is ever going to be fully vacant.
Yeah.
You may have a room vacant for a period of time, and you know, it's quite amusing, and you may have seen some of the stories about this. People go on about 100% occupancy, say, always 100% occupancy. If you've got a small portfolio, that is probably possible, but when you're talking about thousands of units, it's quite difficult to have 100% occupancy.
Yeah.
So then you've got to be looking at, well, how can I make sure I'm maximising the yield as much as possible? And doing all these, you know, creative marketing techniques to make sure they are as full as possible.
Yeah.
90-95% definitely possible. High 90s probably.
Yeah.
100% I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Don't know what your experience is of that, but
it's interesting because I've owned a lettings agency as well, so we know the hints and tips and tricks, yeah, and strategies and so on. But there's a set strategy of renting property out, and so very briefly, it's making sure you're marketing all the time, great headlines, great images, great description.
Yeah.
And then when you get a phone call, is to vet the phone call,
yeah,
and qualify the person.
Yeah.
When are you looking to move? How long are you looking to move for? Where do you work? Who's the decision maker? How long are you looking to stay for? What else do we ask? How long have you been in your previous property? We don't ask if you're in a relationship, but if we can find out. But I just, you know,
is it just for yourself?
Yeah. Or, if we've got a tenant who he's moving in with his girlfriend and it's their first property together, we don't want them. Because that might not work out.
Yeah.
But when we get a tenant, we go, yeah, we've been together 5 years and we're now looking for our next place. I'm like, that's awesome. We're going to live there for the next 5 or 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And so we qualify before we do the viewings. That's when we get to the viewing, I'm closing one out of two. And if I'm closing one out of three, I'm getting depressed because I'm better than that, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's one out of three, one out of four, I've done something wrong. I'm not qualifying properly.
Yeah.
Now, it can depend on the market and where we are in a cycle. So, for example, in September, we put rents up in September. So if you listen to this, this is a great tip.
Yeah.
Put your rents up in September, because what happens in September? All the students come in. Not, you know, a lot of students are booking in between sort of July, June and August and so on. But you have all this clearing stuff as well.
These late
tenants coming in September.
That's
rents
right.
shoot through the roof. So we put rents up in September by 25%.
Yeah, I mean, we typically get maybe 50 extra calls a week
during
just people desperate for accommodation.
And it's not just students that affects, because it's for non-students,
because the
students are taking the available properties, which leaves nothing for mum, dad, and two kids.
You know, the thing I'm finding is that there just isn't the accommodation.
No, there isn't.
So again, pushing rents up. What you've got is this, and I'm seeing it more and more and more, because we work very closely with Northampton Borough Council, and councils across the land, and also the government, are all about rogue landlords. There's rogue landlords out there. We've got to tackle them. We've got to, you know, get them into the dust and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The problem is, what they're ignoring is, there's no carrot for the good landlords.
Yeah.
So what's happening is, on top of all these tax changes, you're getting more and more and more red tape, regulation, bureaucracy on the good landlords, who are compliant and compliant with all these regulations.
Yeah.
Which obviously is costing more money. You know, this statistic that's always bandied around by everyone, that in HMOs there's more fires than other properties.
Yeah.
That figure is unfounded, and I've never seen any figures that actually show that is the case. But it's a good idea to make sure that those people have various safety precautions in place if it happens.
Yeah.
I agree on that. But when you've got a fire officer come around saying, oh, well, you should really have a sprinkler system, or you should really do this or do that. And it's like, well, that's great, but where's that £3,000 going to come from
for
a sprinkler system?
Mm.
But
you can actually deduct it off your tax.
Well of course, but it's going forward, you can deduct it off your tax, but you're getting taxed on not the income, but the actual underlying asset cost.
Yes.
So, in essence, you probably didn't have to pay out your own money. But as I was saying, there's this clear divide going on. We're seeing in Northampton where you've got the good landlords, they're all compliant, and then you've got the rogue landlords, or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
I don't think all of them are rogue, actually. I think, as we discussed earlier, about the fact that, you know, there's this petition, you know, to try and get a debate in Parliament about these tax changes. It literally got to 68,000 people. Now,
it's 200,000. How many landlords are there? 2 million landlords?
No, it's about 2 million landlords.
About 2 million landlords, and we've got 68,000 signatures.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy numbers.
There was a period of time, it got to about 30,000, and it was stagnant, and then I and some of the people put in a lot of effort to raising that, and we got another 40,000 signatures, which just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
But the point is, I think a lot of people just don't know. And a lot of people just think that, oh, we've got a property, let's just rent it out.
Yeah.
And they're not actually aware of all the regulations.
So they've done no training.
They've done no training.
They don't know what Section 8 or Section 21 is.
They're not aware that they've got to check, is someone from overseas actually legally allowed
the new right to rent
in the UK and live in the UK and all that kind of stuff, of which there's like $2,000-$3,000 fines.
I must admit, you just reminded me, I need to write a letter to my MP to ask him where my badge is. You know, my badge for customs officer?
Yeah,
because now, obviously, we're all customs officers because we have to do right to rent.
And do you get a card and everything?
And a truncheon.
Yeah,
that'd be nice, wouldn't it? To hit people over the head.
And a little hat, of course.
And a hat, yeah.
But, so I think there's this clear divide going on. And the problem is, in the, let's call them the landlords are not complying, I think you've got landlords that are unaware. And, you know, that is an excuse. It's just they are unaware. They should be aware, but they're not.
Yeah.
And then you've got the people that are deliberately flaunting the rules. And they're the people that they're obviously making examples of. But as an example, Northampton implemented selective licensing probably 12 months ago. And they believed there was about 1,600 HMOs that needed licensing. They've only received applications of 400 or so.
Wow.
So what does that tell you? It tells you a couple of things. Firstly, no one knows. Secondly, is that figure actually true?
Yeah.
Because obviously, whilst they would argue it's not a revenue generating exercise, the number of new people in that department have come from somewhere.
Yeah, of course it's revenue generating. Of course it is.
They've come from somewhere, and there's a whole bunch of new little eager beavers running around.
Yeah, of course.
And the other. And obviously it's a good way of expanding a department's headcount, which obviously I'm sure goes in favour of whoever's heading up that department.
Yeah.
And thirdly, you've got this whole kind of thing going on of people under the radar. And I think what's happening is, and you probably get these calls yourself, is people ring up and say, oh, you know, I want a room. How much can you afford? £250 a month. Well, we're not going to even talk to you because we don't have any rooms at that level.
Yeah.
But there are people that will rent at that level. And you've almost got this, I don't even know what you'd call it, it's kind of like a sub-tenant market going on where they'll just take anything. They won't have a signed tenancy agreement.
Yeah.
They'll be living in suboptimal conditions.
Yeah.
And that really does affect the whole media perception of landlords because that is happening.
Yeah.
But the question I'd kind of put to you, and I know we're kind of, you're maybe talking to me, but you know, what is the government doing to encourage and incentivise good landlords to actually be good?
We're not doing anything.
Nothing.
I just find it interesting, the whole, like, last 12 months is seems to be the government trying to get rid of smaller landlords. And I think they're trying to allow bigger corporations, maybe pension companies, to buy up more property and make it easier for those guys. That's what I think seems to be happening. What the...
Definitely, 100% agree with you. If you look at transcripts of what the housing minister's been talking about over the last 12 months, pretty much in every speech he's done, he's talked about corporate, basically bringing in a corporate feel to the private rental sector. He's talked about the cottage industry, what's going on right now. He's talked about, he's actually said small, stupid landlords on several occasions, which has kind of gone unnoticed. And a lot of the big boys are now, we've started talking about in the last 6 months, British Property Federation, you know, about institutionalising the sector. Allsops literally last week had a thing in about HMOs and saying, well, why do institutional investors and corporates get into HMOs? Because it's a great opportunity and we don't understand why they're not doing it, and they should, because it needs cleaning up.
Yeah.
And you've got this whole media perception driven by this need, I believe, to essentially bring corporates into the sector. But the question then is, what is the end game and who's being paid what to do that?
Well,
because what incentives are going on right now to actually, you know, have someone be a good landlord? There are no incentives whatsoever. There's no national accreditation scheme. You know, I've talked to Northampton Borough Council about this and said, you know, why don't you set up a scheme in Northampton, I said, why don't you be the forerunner? You know, why don't you actually go out there and say, you know what, we want to encourage good landlords.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you discounts off your licence fee.
Yeah.
We're going to give you access to, say, empty homes, which is another thing we can talk about because that's just laughable.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to give you opportunities to actually get into trade services at a much lower discount because we're a council, we should have massive buying power.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. And to some instances, they're interested, but they're only interested insofar as, you know, lip service.
Of course.
And they are, to be fair to Northampton Borough Council, they are doing a few things, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
Granger, big corporate company, have committed £850 million to purchasing properties. As soon as the announcement came out in the budget about the the changes in the tax and stamp duty,
yeah,
there was a firm that bought, I think, £15 million portfolio up in the northeast.
Wow! So £50 million portfolio.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, when I see all these stories going around, and I'm writing a kind of report at the moment on what's going on, because I feel quite passionate about the fact that there needs to be this whole incentive for landlords, because
yeah,
if there isn't, I think no one really knows, no one really cares. And I think what's going on in terms of lobbying right now from people like the NLA and the RLA is frankly pathetic.
Yeah,
I did see the first ever NLA poster ever in a service station a few weeks ago,
yeah,
advertising membership.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's like, well, that's great.
That was 10% off or something, wasn't it?
That's lovely, but what about last March or April, whenever the budget came out, having posters everywhere saying, your rent's going to go up by 40% because of the government, sign this petition.
Yeah.
Hello. Interestingly enough, because we're going to be launching this fund shortly, we've talked with some of the big corporate players in letting, people like Countrywide and other people like that, and you know what, they don't do HMOs.
Yeah.
Why don't they do HMOs? Because there's hundreds of regulations around HMOs, and they can make more money managing a single let property, because you and I both know, doesn't take that much to manage a single let property.
No.
But a HMO does require weekly fire checks.
Yeah.
If you've got a fire system, which most of them will have by now, you know, checks of emergency lighting, all those good stuff, which means people on the ground. So when they talk about corporate bodies coming into the market, I think what's going to happen personally is what happened in the noughties, where you had all these flats going up everywhere, and just hundreds and hundreds of these flats, faceless entities. It's going to be like that. It's going to be a lack of choice, and then they're just going to put the rents up.
Yeah.
And it's going to go into corporate coffers,
yeah,
who are probably based offshore, not paying any tax.
And interesting, when we talk about corporations, so like, who did the security on the Olympics so well? Oh, it was G4S, because they did such a good job, didn't they? Do you remember we had to call the army in to do security in the Olympics?
Yeah.
So, but we didn't lose a contract or anything like that. And if anything, they probably got more contracts, right?
Of course.
And then who
managing
does...
Managing prisons.
Yeah, at managing prisons, because they're very successful at managing prisons.
Not
no
really.
Prisoners have escaped from G4S, have they?
No.
Obviously, I'm saying that a bit tongue-in-cheek, because it seems to happen quite regularly. And then, so that's interesting. I wonder who's got shares in G4S. I just wonder who's on the board of G4S. Now, I don't know for sure, because I've not checked, but it'd be interesting to see who that might be.
Yeah.
Let's take another company, like, who does the congestion charge in London? Is it Capita? It's Capita,
yeah,
isn't it? Capita do a load of stuff as well, don't they? Some of the parking fines, they're outsourced now. I think that's Capita as well.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? I wonder who buys shares in Capita. Who could that be in the government, I wonder? And who's on the board of directors and who's getting paid money for that? Let's find it.
Yeah.
So interesting. It's just about...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not a huge train buff, but I do enjoy trains in terms of the old steam trains. And
yeah,
one of the things I love about, you know, I was talking to you earlier about being in Spain for a little while, is, you know, how cheap trains are there.
Yeah.
You know, just from getting from A to B. And sometimes you still want to get in a cab.
Efficient.
Oh, very efficient.
On time. Even in Spain.
Yeah. I was really quite staggered.
I was on a train that was 23 minutes late, panic everywhere.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it before, you know.
But you're looking, just to Northampton as an example, because obviously that's where I'm from, where I live. You can't go from east to west. It's not possible.
Right.
Because what happened is, in the 50s, Beeching, who was a civil servant, did a report, and he said, well, we need to do this, and this. But what was that report pushed by? It was pushed by a government minister in charge of transportation, who had shares in oil companies. And what is best for oil companies? Motor vehicles.
Yeah.
So why did all the branch lines and everything disappear across the UK?
Yeah.
Which to me would make perfect sense to happen there today. You know, to get from, say, Wellingborough to Northampton, it's not possible by train. You'd have to go down into London or up into Amsterdam. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Whereas just think how many cars you could take off the road if you had proper transportation.
Of course,
Hundreds of thousands of cars. So when you say about who owns the shares and things, it just It brings a smile to my face.
I've often thought it a bit weird, though. Like, things like, I remember being as a child, and you get on public transport, and then, well, you have to pay. But surely that's provided by the government for the people of the city that you're paying your taxes for, so it should be free, right? And I never got that. And if it was free, then it'd take all these cars off the road, wouldn't it? Because if I could jump on a tram to come from the house in Leeds to where we are now, I would do that.
Yeah.
Rather than parking a car and sitting in traffic. I got stuck in traffic this morning.
Yeah.
And then sports centres. Why are sports centres for under 16s chargeable? That should be just free of charge, right?
Why swimming lessons chargeable?
Yeah, absolutely. Because then that would reduce obesity. Yeah. It's not rocket science, right?
Yeah.
And then we'd have less stress on the NHS. It's not rocket science, but why can't we do this? It's just, we've got it all wrong. It's just the people in charge. And it's interesting because the people in charge are very selfish. That's why they get into that power. And all the people full of love, light and goodness never get to that stage because they're full of love, light and goodness.
Sure.
You've got to be a certain type of person to get in charge. Have you seen House of Cards, by the way?
Of course.
That's just an awesome, awesome
program. The UK and US versions, yeah.
And you just think, that can't be true. And I bet you it is. I absolutely...
100%.
Yeah. You have to be...
The guy that obviously wrote that, Michael Dorn's now a lord.
Yeah.
You know, he was very involved in that.
You have to be wired to get to that level. And that's why when we talk about love, light and goodness and worldwide peace and that sort of, it will never happen. Because the people who need to make that happen haven't got the aggressive genes to get into a position of power.
Yeah.
That's funny, really interesting. Okay, so so you've got your HMOs and you're doing that. You've got your lettings agency and you're doing that. And you've got the property bonds. When's the property bond becoming available?
Probably April, I'd say.
About April time. So that's April 2016.
Yeah.
It depends
on
when people are listening to the podcast and so on.
Yeah.
Okay. And if people are interested about that, how do they get more information?
There's nowhere really to go right now.
Okay.
I mean, well, what I'd suggest is that, you know, my main kind of training and mentoring company is Wealth Success Alliance. So if you want to get on wealthsuccessalliance.com or your HMO...
So what's it called again?
Wealth Success Alliance.
Wealth Success Alliance.
.co.uk.
Great.
You can get on the emailing list there, and obviously when it launches, I'll let everybody know. Otherwise, if you're more interested in HMOs, the website we have specifically for that is yourhmoexpert.com.
Great.
And that's been running for 10 years this year, actually.
So someone's got a HMO in Northampton, and they don't want to manage it, you can manage it for them?
Of course, yeah. That's easier.
Brilliant. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what was the websites again? Just give those websites again.
So, wealthsuccessalliance.co.uk is our kind of overriding website for all activities in terms of what we do from a training and mentoring and education point of view. For people specifically interested in HMOs, that's yourhmoexpert.com.
Got it, okay. And the training and mentoring that you do, what's that consist of?
It's basically about building a business, a property business. I feel a lot of people in property get into property because they want to escape from something, generally a job or some other position that they're in.
Yeah.
And they build up assets, but then what they don't realise is then those assets need professionally managing, either by themselves or someone else. And in essence, you are building some kind of business, and all the facets that go along with the business need to come into play in terms of property. I know you talk about this as well, and it's just so true, because there's so many people operating in a very amateurish fashion out there in the property industry, which I think doesn't help the media perception either, that's why there's a bad perception out there. And I have to talk to people like the RLA and NLA about this, and they're kind of interested, not interested enough to actually take it to the next step. But I think if there was more incentives in place to encourage people to go down that route, and it was more attractive for people to do that, then they would certainly probably look at it in a lot more detail. But yeah, it's you know, I have a mentoring program where we work with people on building six-figure businesses. Why six figures? I think because for most people, when you say make £1 million, it's just unimaginable for most people. They can't get their heads around it. But if you say, actually, would you like to make 100K? It's like, well, can I do that? Well, yes, you can. And it'll probably take you, it could take you 12 months, it could take you 18 months, it could take you 2 years. But yes, you definitely can.
Yeah.
You've just got to be smart about what you do and how you build your business.
Yeah.
And then once you get to that 100K mark, you're in the top 2% of wealth in the UK.
Yeah.
Then you've got some choices and options. And then it's all about how can you leverage from 100K up to a million? Well, that is then a different playing field, but it's easier to do because you've got a firm foundation.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's very much about building businesses. You know, we have some kind of like more specific intense programs. I do a 90-day get your first HMO program, which is just about getting a HMO and nothing more. It's just get it in, get it going.
Because usually that's the hardest one, right? Your first one's always the hardest.
The first one is tough, but once you've done it, it's just rinse and repeat.
And then you've got confidence in your abilities, and you know you can do it because you've actually done it. Because that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can do that because I've never done it. Precisely. But if you can handhold them through that process to get the first one, then the next one's a lot easier. And the next one, and the next one, and the next one.
Yeah, and I think you know, a lot of people are put off by HMOs because of the regulations. And yes, there are a lot of regulations, but it's like with anything. If you have some systems and processes in place to, okay, checklist, have I done this? Yes. Have I done this? Yes. Yeah. Have I done this? Check them off. Then it's just like what the council do. They've got a little checklist.
Yeah.
And when they come to your house, they check off their little list.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you just need a similar checklist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you're sorted.
Awesome. Right, well, I just personally like to say thank you for doing the podcast today. It's been really interesting. I love talking about what's going on with the government and all this new stuff that's coming through. I find it really interesting. But then also understanding where you came from, how you got started, and what you're doing moving forward. I just find it really interesting. So, Matthew, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.